Welcome to the Cycle of Ethical podcast. It's me again, Andy Kirkpatrick. I'm laid on the settee. What day is it? It's Thursday. I'm laid on the settee. So I might sound a bit strange. What's that woman? What's that, that band Texas? Whatever them, that woman in Texas. Apparently she did a whole album like laying on a settee, like changed the sound. So it's about 12 o'clock on Thursday. I didn't go to bed till 2 because I was in Newcastle yesterday on tour. So I'm a bit wasted. I've got Lancaster tomorrow, which is Friday. So I just thought I'd get this podcast done on time because it's good to get these things. It's good to get these things on time. It's funny when you're really getting into listening to your podcasts. It's kind of if a new podcast doesn't turn up, it's kind of this. It's sort of it's sad. Like you're really waiting for something to, you have like this, they're almost like your friends, and you want to listen to hear them. But it's kind of sad. Like there's a few, like I think that Eric Weinstein's podcast, he hasn't done one for almost like 6 or 7 months or something. So maybe it's a bit like, when I went to sixth form when I was a kid, I was a teenager, I was doing art and history A level, which I failed at both of them. But I started going to sixth form. I don't know why. I wanted to go to art college, so you need to have an A level to go to art college. So I started going, and I kind of had this idea that it was going to be this, like, is it collegiate? This kind of collegiate atmosphere and all that kind of stuff, but it wasn't really. It was just a bit shit. Like, I really love history A level, but basically I was just, like, sitting. There's only two people doing history A level, and we both basically sat in this the school I was going at. They were closing it down, and they were amalgamating it with another school, which then eventually they closed that one down as well. So none of them exist anymore. It was basically like, we've got these two shit schools. Let's amalgamate them. And if we make them into if we make two shit schools together, we'll maybe make a good school. But basically just made it like an even bigger shitter school than they had before. So they just knocked it all down. I don't know what happened to all the kids, but maybe just left them in there. But I had this, so I had to walk to this other school to do history A level. And, it was like every couple of days you have to go over there. And literally you just sat in this room with this kind of tired old teacher who looked like he'd just rather like drink himself to death, and he would just literally just read from his notes, probably from when he did, history at school, like 50 years before. And it was just so fucking boring. All you were doing was sitting there just writing out, you might as well just give me the bits of paper. I'll just take them, just photocopy them, give them to me. So, because my handwriting was terrible, so I couldn't actually read my own notes anyway. So it was pointless. A pointless exercise. But when I did history, all level history. One reason, like the all level history, was everyone was like scared shitless of the teacher. It kind of went around that he was some sort of like karate black belt, but he just didn't take any shit. So he had a lot of discipline in that classroom. And it was just really interesting. He was a very good teacher. He was like one. He was probably like the only good teacher in that whole school, I think. So, what was my point? I was talking about history, school. What was I started talking about? God, I can tell I'm tired because I can't. Let me see. But let's go backwards in time. So I was talking about history. Doing history, yeah, it sixth form, that was it. So anyways, I had a shit sixth form, I had a shit history teacher, and also I was supposed to be doing art, but there wasn't even a fucking art teacher to do A level, so I was just like left on my own devices. I was just basically left on my own devices. God, school was so shit in those days, And so I started going to sixth form for like a couple of, maybe like a month and stuff. And then I just sort of stopped going. And my mum was working, so my mum would go to school and I'd be like, oh, I have to go in later on. And then I just like sat at home. I used to watch Spinal Tap every day. Like I literally watched Spinal Tap like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times. I just watched that every day. And I used to watch Neighbours. That was kind of cool. I basically became a bit reclusive, really. You know, these days they would say I had something wrong with me, like I always had depression or whatever. Anyway, eventually I decided I should go after, like, you know, 7 months. I decided I should go in, and no one seemed to chase up, ask where I was or anything, you know, because the school was basically closing down anyway. So anyway, after about 7 or 8 months, I thought I better go in and just sort of see what was going on. I could probably just like rock in there and no one would notice. Anyway, I turned up and it wasn't there anymore. It'd been knocked down. So it'd all be knocked down, and it basically moved to a sixth form college somewhere else. So at the beginning of the next year, I started going to that college, and that was shit as well. It was kind of a bit better, but I was just shit. It wasn't the college that was shit. I was just shit, and I didn't get any A levels at all. So it was a bit of a pointless 2 years. And what was my point? The point about not going in. Why was I talking about sixth form? Oh God, this is going to be like a fucking rambling podcast. I was talking about not going in, talking about going to Newcastle, talking about, I can't even remember my train of thought. Maybe I should rewind it. So I said, hello, I'm tired, and something about sixth form. It was something about not going in, I think it was that idea about not going in. What did I say? Come in late. Oh God, never mind. This, it'll come to me. So I was talking till, I didn't get into like 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's always kind of, like when you're on tour, the big thing is to not get too tired. Because tomorrow, like I've basically got like four gigs, one after the other, starting tomorrow. So you just kind of get worn down, and the tidier you get, your brain starts going. And because you're standing on the stage, you haven't got any notes or anything. You just have to be a little bit on the ball, because you can get you can kind of forget where you are. Like yesterday, I was on the stage and I couldn't remember the name of Lou Kenya, which is a crag I climbed at in Kenya. And then I couldn't remember Hell's Gate, which was another crag I climbed at. And he actually had to say to someone in the audience, does anybody know where this is? And he was like, Hell's Gate. I was like, that's the one. So yeah, you start losing it a bit. Like I was thinking about when I had this job on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the like Tim Burton film. You're on a set and the lighting is exactly the same. Like the reason you have a set rather than filming outdoors is you can completely control the environment and the lighting. So you just literally press a button and the lighting is exactly the same every day, you know, weeks on end. And the problem with that is you don't get any sense of time because the light doesn't change. And that job was so boring that after about 2 months of being on this ginormous set that's in, it's like the 007 soundstage, in Pinewood Studios, like after 2 months, sometimes I'd be standing there and be like, have I just got here or am I about to go home? Like, what day is it? Like, I literally had no idea where I was or what time it was. You know, it was because it was just like this, like every day was exactly the same. So someone told me a story that they were in the SAS and they got this guy and who was on some kind of interrogation training. And they put him in a barrel, like a oil barrel, and they closed it. And then every hour they put some food through the bottom, you know, like put his breakfast in and then his dinner in, and then every hour. And he thought he'd been in this barrel for like a week, but he'd only been in there, you know, for like 2 days or something. Sure, 2 days is bad enough. This is, why am I talking about this? I don't know. so I was, but anyway, so it kind of went again, like all the gigs, they're all like not as busy as they'd usually be, but you just have to, it's all about the aggregate of how many bums on seats you have for the whole tour. And so I was driving back from there. It was like at midnight. I had to stop at the services to get some coffee so I didn't like crash my car. And the woman working in the coffee in the services, like the services were completely dead. This like woman all by herself, like working behind the thing. And I was thinking, like, Christ, like what a job. Just because often, like, if you have a shit job, but what makes it not shit is the people you're with. You know, often you can get like a good job with shit people or a shit job with good people, and it's better to have the, you know, like, in the long run. In the short term, you can deal with shit people, but in the long term, you know, you're better with you know, people who make your life better, really. And so I was thinking often when you work in that kind of retail kind of hospitality thing, people don't treat you like a human being. They just think you're of a you know, remember Transformers. You know, it was like Transformers, robots in disguise. So there's, you know, someone worked in the shop and someone used to go, part timers, robots in disguise. Anyway, that guy actually, Weird Steve, he was called. He actually turned up on University Challenge, which is kind of weird. Anyway, so I was trying to talk to the woman like she was a human being, and I was saying, "Oh, do you meet many vampires? Do you get many vampires coming in here?" And I was saying you could make a really good sort of Buffy the Vampire Slayer series, but with a woman who works in Costa, who fights vampires and things. Although it'd be quite hard because you'd have to be available to make coffee for like truck drivers and, you know, people who drive around at night. There's only one other guy in there. There was one other guy in there, and it was kind of weird in that he had really badly shaved hair. Like maybe someone else must have done it because it was like really patchy. And then I was wondering if maybe he had tattoos under his head, but I think it was just really bad shaving. But when I went outside, he was in this big van, and it was like some like 5-star kebabs or, you know, luxury kebabs or something. And he was basically frozen kebabs, and he would drive. It looked like he was probably driving around the country at night delivering luxury kebabs. It wasn't luxury; the word was It was like a really inappropriate term. Inappropriate, as in it just was like just over the top. It was, you know, it was like, you know, like royal kebabs or something, or something like that. So originally, I thought he had. I thought when I drove up that he was someone who did brakes, and I was going to go and ask him, because when I was driving to the gig, suddenly there was this like rattly sound, like I've just spent like 700 quid on my car getting it fucking mended, because the people who did the it got a service like a year ago, had a new timing belt on, and they didn't put a bolt back in, so the timing belt has been rubbing. So they luckily I've driven, you know, been driving all over the country, luckily it didn't go, but anyway, I still had to pay for 700 quid. So it's like snakes and ladders, you know, you're making money, but you're spending money in the process. So it is what it is. So I just paid that, all this money, and I'm driving to Newcastle, and suddenly this like weird sort of noise, and like coming from the side of the car, and I sort of pull over, and I'm like, oh, maybe it'll just disappear. It's like driving again. It's like, no, it sounded like something was dragging on the bottom of the ground, but just couldn't see anything, what the problem was. So then I ended up like going up to a guy in a van. I was like, excuse me, if I just drive up and down on this, like the parking area here, can you tell me where the sound's coming from? And luckily he was down with it. So I just like drove really slowly backwards and forwards. And he was like, it's coming from your wheel. So I ended up having to like lift the car up, like, you know, luckily all my training from Africa, I had to like literally change a tire every day, so I'm very good at it now. Then so I lifted the car up, took the wheel off, and then there was a behind where the brake is, the brake pads, there was like a metal plate that somehow come off. It looked like some sort of protection plate, maybe, hopefully. Anyway, it kind of come off and it was sort of like banging into everything. So I just had to take that off. It was off anyway, take it off and then shove it in the boot and put the wheel back on and then keep driving. So that's a job for me to fucking sort out. But it's like, it's impossible to get anything done at the moment because nobody has any staff, like no garages, no nothing. So it's, it seems to be the thing. So I'll just have to drive and just hope my wheel doesn't fall off or something. So I almost went up to this guy with this piece of metal I'd got off my car and said, excuse me, do you know what this is? Seeing as he's like sold fucking kebabs, he'd be like, no. He'd probably think it was some, it actually looked like it had some sort of weapon. It looked like a scythe or something. You'd probably think I'm going to murder him or something, which would actually fit in quite well with the Buffy the Vampire Slayer thing. I could be like some kind of serial killer. It was a really good program called, it was like a really old, it's like from the 60s or 70s. Was it called something? It's called Night Stalker. It was like a man's name, Night Stalker. It was an American program. And that was kind of cool. It was like a guy who was like a reporter who went around and he had to, every episode, like there'd be like a vampire or a yeti or something. That was kind of cool. Anyway, so you could make like a version of that, but with someone who works at Costa Coffee. You'd have to change the name because you wouldn't be able to use it for licensing, you know, for, you know, you'd have to call it like Roster Coffee or something, or Rarbucks, or Costa Books or something. I was trying to cheer the woman up, and I'm sure she was happy. She thought she was happy, and I was telling her this thing. I'm like, you know, every job that people do, no matter how, you know, bad it is, like through that job they learn some wisdom about humanity, about the world. And I'm like, so I always give the example, I've probably said this before, this example of, I once asked somebody who sold ice cream in an ice cream van, I was like, what have you learned in your life from selling ice cream to people? And he thought for a minute and then he was like, people really fucking love ice cream. So anyway, so I said this to the woman. Woman laughed. And then maybe sometimes you're not really used to somebody being like, you think like, why is this random person being so chatty? Like, is he on drugs? Like, is he going to rape me? Is he a psycho or something? It's kind of sad, isn't it? I think the same, that when people, you know, in Ireland, everybody is quite chatty. So you ask the directions and you get like, you know, like in America, if you know, like people just tell you, you know, you could be on the bus and you're the Dalai Lama and basically the person behind you just starts telling you about themselves, you know, without saying, oh, you look like a very interesting person. Where are you from? And it's like, I am from Tibet, but my, you know, you could tell you, okay, great story about, you know, being that I was the chosen one and then China invaded my country. I had to flee and now I basically, you know, hang out with superstars and stuff. I was funded by the CIA and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, but they don't. All they do is just like talk about themselves, basically. But in Ireland, people, if you ask directions, people will basically, you know, tell you a big long tale. But it's always really interesting. It's never really about them. It's always about, you know, other people and stuff. It's kind of cool. Although these days people probably do it less because they're probably terrified that you're gonna, just by talking to someone, that they're gonna kill you. People are often very not very forthcoming with telling me their wisdom of what they've learned in their job selling coffee. So I had to set it up now. You had to keep going. So I was like, well, what, I was like, do you think most people, if you actually ask them, like quiz them on the coffee, would they actually know what it is they drink? You know, like, so what's the difference between a flat white and Americano? Or what's the difference between, you know, this coffee or that coffee? Because I was once in a coffee place, and I ordered a latte, and the guy was like, "Oh, latte, the coffee for people who don't like coffee." And it's probably true, really. So you probably, you know, I once went to an Indian restaurant and we ordered some poppadoms, and the guy refused to give us any. And he said, "I would not give my children crisps before they had their tea." And I thought it was quite cool. Anyway, quite a cool thing to say. But one of the people got really upset, like, "I want poppadoms. You know, you're here to service me," and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. But anyway, poor, yeah, so I didn't, maybe it's not poor. I had a little conversation about, they have these kind of like vegetable-based, I keep saying that, but anyway, plant-based, not bacon sandwiches, where it looks like a bacon sandwich, and you pay for it, and you get in your car, and you're driving along, and you open it, it's like, what the fuck's this? And it's like those Razzler, is that a porno magazine? Razzler something, any Rizzlers? Are there Rizzlers? I know that we make cigarettes out of. Anyway, it was just this, like, you know, it's supposed to look like bacon if you've never seen bacon. If someone's describing over the phone what bacon would look like, that's what this looked like. Anyway, it was like absolutely disgusting. So yeah, that's that. I need to read the. You shouldn't really be putting fucking non-bacon sandwiches next to bacon sandwiches. That's like, you should have a completely separate place for them. Ideally, like in a skip, because the woman said no one buys them. The only people who buy them are idiots like me who don't really pay attention to these things. So yeah, I keep using the word vegans in my talk, and I have to be. I think I might be losing people because people don't like that kind of, you know, that offensive kind of language. So, I suddenly thought about something then. I had a little aside. Was it about bacon sandwiches? What was it? What was it about? Like, I know I'm rambling here. I'm gonna get to the point in a minute. Bacon sandwiches. I bought a bacon sandwich. Oh yeah, that was it. When I was in Newcastle, I needed to get some food. Because it's good to eat something before you go on stage. And it's good to eat something at the half time, because otherwise you have a bit of an energy dip. So I went over to the, it was like opposite the Newcastle Opera House, Newcastle Theatre and Opera House. It was like a little tiny corner shop. And I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember Mr. Ben. So Mr. Ben is, you know, this man, he would go into a shop, into like a tailor's. And the man was like magic, who owned tailors. And he would say, put on this uniform and then go through this curtain. And he would find himself in this magical world. So he'd put on the uniform of like, it wasn't a First World War soldier. And he'd go through the curtain and he'd be in the First World War or something. Or he'd put on the uniform of a train driver and he'd go through and he'd be like, where there was trains or something. Anyway, this was like that. But it was like, to do with porno magazines. Because basically I opened the door, and there was Mr. whatever his name, who owns the Mr. Ben's shop, and there was just this massive big rack of porno magazines. Like, no, it wasn't. It was like two massive racks. You know, you usually have the top shelf. I don't even have it these days. You know, in the olden days, you had the top shelf was all porno magazines. Unless you're in Norway. In Norway, all the porno magazines are on the bottom shelf, which is kind of weird. I think it's kind of, you know, indoctrinate children into it's okay. You know, like, sex is not a bad thing. Well, it obviously is. So anyway, so they have all the porno magazines on the top. But he had, like, just two massive shelves of porno magazines. And no other, there was no, like, Woman's World or Titbits or whatever. There was just, like, these two things. And I said to him, like, oh, my God, like, what's going on? Like, it's like going back in time in here. And I thought, you know, the people not have the internet in these parts. It was really weird. He was like an Indian guy. And I bought two Snickers, put two Snickers bars and some crisps. Not good healthy food for being on the stage, but it was okay. And it was at one of those places where it's like, oh, you have to spend more than £3 to use the card machine. It's like, Christ, what's this? Anyway, that was another thing. When I went to the theatre, they said, like, what's the Wi-Fi code to use the theatre? And they're like, oh, we have to charge you to use the Wi-Fi. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, have I actually gone through some sort of wormhole? And I've gone back to, like, you know, 2007. You know, it was like, it's kind of a bit weird, really. So maybe that's Newcastle for you. And Newcastle seems to be stuff going on. There was a really odd, like, one-way system where you know, you pull up at the theatre and they say, oh, you need to park, you have to park in the car park, the multi-story car park behind the theatre. But to get there, you have to go through this one-way system, which took about half an hour to go around to just get back to the other side of the thing. Maybe that was some kind of like time loop or something, wormhole that I went through. So maybe we did go back in time. So, but I seem to have come back to the real time now. So that's good. So yeah, and that perfectly leads on to what I was going to talk about. And I was thinking, I've got like a big list of things I'm supposed to be talking about. But I thought I'd talk about regret, because regrets are kind of interesting thing, isn't it? Like people don't really talk about it that much, but it is like a real sort of very it's like a pillar in your life in a way, isn't it? Regret. I think often people who have like the least amount to be regretful for are also the most regretful. And maybe it's because like some people don't really have lives that they what's the word? It's not illustrated lives. They don't really think about their lives or their past or whatever. They're just always kind of. They're just not really interested about the. Some people aren't interested in the past, and they're not interested about the future either. They don't really think about it, and they just kind of go through life as if. Do you know those like video cameras you can put on your car that are on the front of your wing mirror, and they're filming everything that goes on, but they're only filming. You know, they're filming. They're just overwriting themselves the whole time, you know, so it's just, you know, every hour it overwrites itself. And so there's no record of the past. And they can't see into the future, although they're looking down the road, which is, if you look down a road, it's kind of seeing into the future, if you know what I mean. So, but they're just overwriting themselves the whole time. So maybe a lot of people are like that. They just, you know, they don't really think about, don't really analyze, overanalyze the past, and they don't really think about the future. They suddenly just think that tomorrow will be like today, because yesterday was like today. So why would tomorrow be like today? And it probably is. Well, I think other people, some people, they spend a lot of time thinking about the past. Now, the Victorians, like it's. Nostalgia is not isn't is different to regret. Nostalgia is probably the opposite of regret, because nostalgia is only remembering all the good things and none of the bad things. Which is maybe like amnesia is maybe some form of amnesia or delusion is quite good. Because I have this thing where, like, you know, I never thought of myself as an ambitious person, but then when I met Ian Parnell, I thought he was the most ambitious climber I'd ever met, and he was like, and he but he thought I was the most ambitious climber he'd ever met, which is kind of weird. I was telling someone yesterday about I've met a friend who was in the military, and he was saying that when you're a climber, you know, like if you're like a military kind of, you know, what do you call it? Command structure, you know, you're being told what to do and you have to do it. But when you're climbing, you're not, you're your own, you know, you're commanding yourself basically. But I said, what happens is usually you're with someone you kind of respect as a climber. You not might res might not respect them as a human being, but you kind of respect them as a climber, or you think they're gonna not be too dangerous. Or if they're gonna be dangerous, they're gonna be dangerous in a way. It's going to be positive for you, but not negative. So they might kill themselves, but they might do a really hard pitch, which you wouldn't dare do because it'd be too dangerous. But you have this kind of thing where you always see the other person as stronger and more motivated than you are, and you're kind of, you know, you're a lesser climber, but they also feel the same about you. So you both kind of create a whole that, you know, the team of those two people. Is makes one very, very positive, you know, force, and that's what can keep you going. And the thing to avoid is for both people to voice doubt, you know, or want to retreat at the same time, because you're trying to live up to that other person's standards that you imagine, and he's trying to live up to your, or she's trying to live up to your standards. So it's kind of interesting. It's probably a bit like if you're in any kind of, you know, not management, if you're leading some kind of team or whatever, you have to try and pretend to be the person who is, you know, like someone who people would follow. Like if people have no respect for you, or if you have no respect for yourself, well, you can probably have no respect for yourself to some degree, but deep down you need to have some kind of respect for yourself, otherwise people will be able to tell, so they wouldn't follow you really. So that was this interesting thing about this guy I met who was Palestinian, and he was saying that Palestinians have no currency, they have no embassy, they have no passports, but they treat themselves, they see themselves as being someone worthy of respect, where he compared like a Palestinian to an Egyptian. Like he said, Egyptians are treated like shit in the Middle East by everybody because they think they're shit in a way. They have no self, they have no pride basically. I'm sure many of them do, but a lot of them don't. You know, like you could slap an, if you were like a, you know, a Saudi, you could slap an Egyptian in the face and they probably wouldn't do anything about it. But if you slapped a Palestinian in the face, they'd probably kill you. So that kind of self-worth, you know, you do get it in some people, but it's probably dying out. It's probably not good to, you know, to have too many people who have too much self-worth in this world. You know, you don't know what they might get up to. So, but yeah, so you had this thing that like a Palestinian will fight to the death over a penny, I think he said. Which is kind of interesting, you know, that thing about Jewish people being tight, you know, like, what's that joke, like, you know, a Jewish person, and they have a fork in the sugar bowl or something instead of a spoon or something like that. But, you know, but I wonder if it's not about, like, you're basically Palestinians and Jews, basically, you know, that culture is basically the same culture, really, you know, so there is... They have the most in common, basically. You know, like someone who was, you know, multiple generations living in Israel, Palestine, and a Palestinian. They have more in common than they have with anybody else in the world. But yet they're kind of, well, we believe that they're enemies, but they probably are like cousins, really. You know, they are separated by religion and other things, but they are actually cousins. A bit like they said that about when we the war in Argentina between the British and the Argentinians, that we were like cousins because we had such a strong connection in loads and loads of ways. But I think the idea of like Jewish people being tight with money or whatever, you know, there is that connection there between someone being, you know, worrying over pennies and someone who kill over a penny. Like it's not about the penny, it's about the respect that should be due to that person, if you know what I mean. Does that make any sense? So anyway, back to regret. So maybe if you have this kind of amnesiac kind of state where you never really consider the past, it's probably quite good, but you're probably not being able to, it probably limits your ability to mature and grow and learn from your mistakes. Like when you're on tour, you're going around, and every single night you think about is all the fuck ups, all the things you made a mistake at, you know, or you could have improved, or the time people weren't laughing, or the time someone walked out, or the time someone's, you know, complained or whatever. You're never thinking about all the positives. You're regretting all the mistakes, and you don't like. I'm often very bad when someone asks for criticism. I'll just be really critical, and I always take it for read that they understand that I'm only taking the effort because I think there's so much good about it that it's worth the effort. Like, if it was shit, like, what's the point? But often people take it that all there is criticism. But that's kind of the way you know, like, I'm always more interested in, like, one-star reviews on Amazon than I am, like, five-star reviews. Or three-star reviews, you know, can be good. It can have some positive things in there. I don't like those Amazon reviews where it says, you know, someone spends their whole life writing their book, you know, and they put everything into it, like, their whole life and everything else, just a million edits. And then they get, the first review is, like, one star, and it says, packaging was damaged, you know. It's like, you fucking idiot. Anyway, being able to be regretful, to analyze things you said and what you did, and to be regretful is very, very important, I think. Like, I have this idea that I think in my children's life, the job of your parent, really, probably not being a parent, just being a human being, is actually to just sort of fucking man up and don't be a child, don't be a baby, don't be a child. Like, don't broadcast your own drama. You can, if you're having traumas and troubles and everything else, you know, you can find an outlet for that with people who are close to you, who are adults. But don't think you should do it in front of your children, and don't think you should be like, I'm really stressed, or be crying, or you know, like, talking about your relationship problems, your divorce and all that kind of stuff. I think you really have to, like, not let your kids see that. I know some people would say that's not right, because really kids should understand these things, but you get, like, an education and all that very quickly as you get older anyway. But you really want your parents, these people who are, like, stone, you know, they love you and they will do everything to protect you, and they will shield you from everything until you get older. You know, I have this thing where, you know, I once said, when I was a kid, and my mum was there, I was like, when we were kids, we were really poor. My mum was like, poor, poor, you weren't poor. I was poor, you weren't poor. which isn't true, really, because I was aware that we had no money. Like, my mum used to say, how are we going to make ends meet? And I thought she meant, like, hen's meat. You know, I was like, well, you know, is that, like, just chicken or something? Anyway. So I was aware of that, and it's not my mum's fault for me being aware. But you had that kind of anxiety, that poverty anxiety that you can sort of get. So I do have regret. Like, I think when I got, when I got divorced, I have this joke at the moment. Like, I've basically had, like, three serious relationships in my life, and I've been married twice. And I've had, like, one relationship where I could have got married. When I got divorced the first time, or split with my wife, I think it was kind of a long time coming. So it wasn't that big a deal in a way. And it was obviously a trauma for your kids. Again, that's the thing, you can sort of delude yourself and think, like, oh, then my kids are fine with it, and you know all that. You can, like, make all these stories up, but they're not fine with it. But I think as an adult, I think I probably dealt with that pretty well. And then, like, the second relationship that's got broke up like that, I handled that really, really badly. And I think that's probably the biggest regret of my life, is not the first thing, and just in, like, loads of ways. But I think I think most men, women, I think women increasingly so, like young women, but less so, are in this kind of perpetual adolescence, and that we don't grow up. And I think we are, you know, this kind of beta male, feminized man thing. And I think I I definitely, although I was this person going off doing daring do, really I was like just being this sort of Peter Pan, not growing up kind of person, not being responsible and everything else. And I think that there were demands placed on me in like my second relationship that I wasn't capable of achieving because I wasn't a man in a way, you know, like, and I think, but in the process of breaking up, I think I realized a lot of those things, and it kind of then made me mature enough to have like a third relationship, which kind of worked because I was more. I think it's that kind of, I guess it's that what I'm talking about is emotional stability, which is in short supply these days. like how you get that emotional stability, I don't know. Maybe you map it from your parents, really. Like my dad has been doing, talking of regret, like my dad works for Samaritans, and he does work with like people with PTSD as well, and you know, he's like he's retired now. If you listen to this, hope you don't mind me telling your age. But anyways, like, you know, he should be just retired now playing golf. And remember, I said to him recently, like, you don't have to, you know, you feel like you're torturing yourself and inflicting a lot of emotional pain on yourself by dealing with other people's shit. Like, I hope you don't feel like you have something to, you know, pay, you know, make amends for, like with your own kids and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, I think as you get older, but again, like regret is actually, again, like I was saying on the last podcast, it's often a manifestation of love and kindness and caring. Even if there was an absence of that in the past that made you say things or do things, like lash out or be angry or something, angry with your kids, angry with people you love and all that kind of stuff. And often the people you love are the ones you could be the most cruel to, because you don't really, the people you have no thought for, care for, like, it doesn't do any good to be, you know, you're just a stranger, but you can really, you know, you can be incredibly cruel to people you love, really. I think maybe because you feel like, you know, they've hurt you and you'll hurt them, but often all of it is just a miscommunication, and again, a lack of being an adult about things. You know, your sort of impulse control and everything else, and, you know, things can really like spiral out of control with people in your lives, like, you know, relationships with, you know, your family and everything else. So, you know, I think again, like, as you get older, you experience it through other people, and you're like, I must never allow those things to happen. I think now, as I'm older, I really believe much more in early interventions of people being honest, you know, like trying to communicate in a way, like don't make it all about you, in a way, you know, like make it about both, you know, that, like, just try, I just think we have like such a lack of actual real empathy these days. Like, all we ever hear about is empathy, but we have almost zero empathy, and it's all about ourselves, you know. But yeah, like trying to avoid things which will then be regretful later on. That's the way to do it, instead of being regretful. Like, you know, if you're estranged from people, you know, just try and fucking sort it out. You know, sort it out before it's too late. Get in touch with people, reach out to people, you know, because it's, you know, there's some things that, you know, some things that can't be sorted out. Some things just, and then you just have to die with them, basically, you know. So it's So yeah, trying to reduce the number of regretful incidents in your life as you got, as you're going on is good. Is thinking like this is something that I am gonna, you know, think about for the rest of my life if it's really bad. Like that kind of that's what in some regards that's it's you know like post-traumatic stress is basically a form of regret in a way. You know, sometimes it can be. I didn't do this, I didn't do that, I didn't say this, you know, I left it too late, I could have stopped this, all these kind of things. And then there's like post-traumatic stress, which is just something so, you know, awful that it, like, you know, it's a bit like, you know, when you see like a really bright light and it kind of like sticks in your eye, I think it's like that. Like something happens to you, experience something so awful that it... it kind of gets singed into your brain. It's there forever. It's not, it's, you know. So yeah. I'm kind of rambling on here. But like that, you could avoid all regret by avoiding anything that could create the chance of regret, which would be avoid all relationships. Avoid any meaningful interactions with people, but then that would, but then would you know? Would you not get to an age where you're like, I regret doing that. I regret having a life free of regret, and you know, it's like again, it's like that story about you know the monkey where they you know tried to find out how he could live as long as possible. So they got a monkey and they put it on like a vegan diet. It wasn't allowed to smoke or take drugs or anything. You know, it didn't really, it couldn't have sex. You know, and basically they managed to get this monkey to live like, you know, 20% longer than a normal monkey, but it was the most miserable monkey that ever lived. You know what I mean? So, like regret is the more interactions you have and the more things you do in your life, the more mistakes you're going to make because like mistakes are easy to spot in retrospect. Like, why didn't I do this? Like I've got so many mistakes to do with, you know, like just keeping my mouth shut or being political or whatever, or just, you know, just playing the game basically, but I'm just not very good at it. So you can look back and you can sort of regret stupid things you did, you know, which were really, really self-destructive. But yeah, but again, it's like, then it's kind of, but you also have to look back and, you know, realize that those things, that lack of impulse control and lack of really caring about things or holding on to things that were important to you, also led to loads of other things. You know, there's people who did everything right and played and did the political thing and, you know, were like a grey man, and they didn't get as far. So it's just, what's the opposite of regret? Regret. Yeah, what's the opposite of regret? I have to email if you think what it is, regret. It's not happiness. No, it's not hard regret. Contentment? I don't know, it's kind of interesting thing. What's the opposite? Maybe it's just best not to... Maybe it is good to have it in your mind. Of trying to avoid it, but at the same time, you know, it could lead to far more regret. So maybe just with all these things, maybe just go with your instinct. You know, maybe just try and focus more on your instinct, and try and stick to have some sort of moral backbone and some kind of you know, shoot straight, walk the line, you know, tell the truth. Ish. yeah, try and instead of like focusing on the regret, try and focus on the very simple set of principles that you can try and stick to that should stop you. Like, don't kill people, you know, don't shag people you don't really know, don't take shitloads of drugs, you know, don't get really pissed, don't steal, you know, all this kind of stuff. Because often a lot of regret come from those, you know, those kind of things. Especially the murder, that's the worst. Depends on your murdering, though. Anyway, but ultimately, regret is part of life. And if you're alive, then you can regret things. And if you're dead, then you can't. So just kind of don't dwell on it too much. You know, don't waste your life thinking about. Do you know when you meet someone who's like they're splitting up with their girlfriend and that's all they fucking talk about? And some people that's all they talk about for the rest of their lives. You know, like it just ruins their lives. So you can have like a little bit of regret time. You know, sit down and like, what do I really regret? And think about that thing, and then think like, what was the lesson from that? Don't open your mouth, or don't, you know, don't ramble on, or don't say these things, or, you know, blah blah blah. And if you realize that you are going to make life difficult for yourself because of your character and your, you know, temperament, everything else, then just accept that's the way you are, and just don't regret it, you know, but just try and be conscious of who you are. You know, as you get older, you're more aware of who you are. So that's it. That's all I've got on regret. I'm not going to dwell on it anymore. But yeah. I'm sure, like, on those cameras, you know, the cameras where it's like filming everything. I've never had one, but I'm guessing that probably the data's in there somewhere. You know, you could go back and analyze it, but maybe just, you know, it serves a purpose. You know, your memory is there to serve a purpose. So just, you know, make sure it serves a positive purpose, not a negative purpose in your life. So, okay, now I'm gonna go off and get a cup of coffee. Flat white, Americano, whatever. And until next time.